As many of you know, Llama Index is an interface between LLMs and your data. It is one of the fastest growing communities in AI. Despite being less than 1 year old, it's already at more than 21,000 GitHub stars, 200,000 monthly downloads, and 11,000 active Discord users. All right, huge round of applause for Jerry and Josh, and come join us on stage. Okay.
Water's good.
All right, Jerry, welcome. Thanks for joining.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
So I think people in this crowd know already, but let's just start with the basics. What is Llama Index and how does it work?
Yeah, so first, thanks for having me. It's great to be here. Great to see this crowd. I really like the venue. It's got a really nice vibe. So Llama Index is a data framework for building LLM applications. Ever since we started, the core value prop has always been to figure out how to give developers the best set of tools to unlock the capabilities of LLMs over your data, whatever that means, right? And I think that definition has probably changed since the early days. Like in the early days, this was really about just like building chatbots, like how do you build a ChatGPT-like experience over your own private data. Since then, obviously, the field has like shifted very quickly. We started to see a lot more stuff around like different types of use cases, from passive to like more interactive, right? There's stuff around structured data extraction. How do you create structured outputs from unstructured text? There's like workflow automation. Like how do you basically put these things just like as part of like co-pilots or conversational agents, but actually make decisions for you, right? And everybody has a different definition for what like an agent is, right? Is it like a React loop? Is it just like a router? Is it just like a chain or whatever you call it? But at the same time, there's clearly this wide spectrum of use cases that have emerged. But I think Llama Index, when it first started, kind of had this idea, like it'd be really cool to just use LLMs with your data. And so as the spectrum of use cases has expanded, so has the scope of Llama Index as a framework. Today, we have a pretty wide set of tools to help enable users to both format their data in the right way, so like ingest data into like a vector store or other storage systems too, to build stuff like retrieval augmentation, agents, those things. And then also kind of like advanced query and agent algorithms to actually kind of unlock value from the data that you have, whether it's unstructured or structured.
So one of the things that you guys seem pretty bullish on is retrieval augmented generation. Can you say a little bit more about that and exactly how it works, how it's different than fine-tuning, and kind of why you're so excited about it?
Yeah, so at a high level, I think retrieval augmentation's kind of fine. I feel like it's had like different names. It used to be called like in-context learning or retrieval augmentation, or you know, it's really just like stuffing stuff into the prompt. It's kind of the hack that everyone discovers when they first play around with LLMs for the first time. And I think this is basically like the same story for us. Like, you know, we kind of just like stumbled upon this approach and developed a framework out of it. And so the idea is you kind of like keep the model fixed, right? You keep GPT fixed so you don't need to train it. And instead you just figure out how to put data into the input prompt. So kind of like using the LLM as a neural CPU to process inputs and give you back outputs. And you can kind of like take those outputs as is, you know, as like text generation, or you could take those outputs as structured information and then feed it back into another sequence of prompts to build agents, other kind of like restricted workflows, that type of thing. And so fine tuning really is about training the model. You need to update the model weights itself, right? And so I think the kind of cool thing about LLMs is like by removing the need to actually train a model over your data in order to build any sort of application, it's really opened up the playing field to like pretty much every developer. And I think that's actually why like generative AI is so popular today. Right, because as a data scientist, machine learning engineer, you know how to actually format your data set and train your model. But the time to value also is pretty high. Like you need to actually train a model and it's going to take like an hour. Or if it's like a neural net, it's going to take like maybe a day or something. And then you see the results. Whereas with GPT, it's just like, you know, play around with it for like 30 seconds, you immediately see something. And I think that is something that this idea of retrieval augmentation really plays nicely with. Yeah.
Thinking about the language model as neural CPU is kind of interesting. What do you think about really long context lengths? Like, do we need super long context lengths? Do we need 100K tokens, a million tokens? Or if this really is a neural CPU, can you get away with doing a whole bunch of smaller operations?
Yeah, I think long context lengths definitely help. It just helps expand the range of choices. I don't think long context lengths are the entire answer, at least right now, right? Like, who knows what the field might look like? I can give my predictions too, I guess, if that's helpful.
That's what I'm looking for.
Okay. So the story is like we played around with Anthropic's like 100K model, which by the way does not fit an entire 10K filing from Uber, right? Uber 10K filing is 160,000 tokens, so it's not 100. So you actually still have to do some sort of, you know, sequencing or some sort of iteration on the prompts to actually get back an answer. So when we try just stuffing the context window with a prompt, there's a few things. I think with like Claude V 1.3, it actually didn't really understand the prompt that we gave it, so I just gave back the wrong answer. Claude 2 actually understood the prompt. But the other thing, it took 60 seconds and also cost like a lot more money, right? And so I think cost and latency are always just going to be one of those factors that affect how you choose to retrieve context. And for what it's worth, I think, and this is interesting, I think Tuana from Haystack DeepSet actually brought up during one of our webinars, like the size of context that you actually need for your application really depends on your use case. And sometimes it could actually be dynamic depending on the type of query you want to run. So for summarization queries, yeah, you really do want the entire context and you do want to stuff the entire context window. For stuff around like specific facts, doing that all the time can be just basically a waste of resources. And so you probably do need some sort of vector indexing or advanced retrieval to really fetch the most salient pieces that you need. So I think there is the dumb way to go about it where you just like try to stuff as much as possible. And it definitely helps expand the scope of applications, but I think there's still a need for retrieval augmentation.
Yeah. Okay, I want to take a step back a little bit and go back to the journey. I know you started this as a side project while you were still working full time. Can you kind of take us from there to where Llama Index is today?
Yeah, definitely. So I worked at the same company that Harrison from LangChain did, which is Robust Intelligence. And at the time, September, October, everybody was kind of just playing around with like GPT-3. And so the short story is like, you know, I was kind of hacking around with it. Harrison clearly was like hacking around with it as well. And I kind of just had this idea of like, okay, well, I was trying to build a sales bot, basically. Like I was taking GPT-3, like the DaVinci API, and I was trying to like feed in all the customer calls from our company. Like they're just tracked in notes as like Notion. And then I was trying to figure out like, okay, well, like, can you actually answer questions over my customer calls? And at the time, like this whole idea of like embedding-based retrieval and using a vector DB, like really that concept really didn't exist. And for what it's worth, like I knew embeddings were a thing, but I also just wasn't really interested in that at the moment. I was kind of more just interested in like, how can you just use the LLM to index and then also traverse like a large set of like external information? And so I think that was what inspired the initial idea of like GPT index at the time. Right, and it was called GPT Index. We renamed it to Llama Index the week before the Llama model came out. So everybody thinks, like, including Logan from OpenAI, it was like, oh yeah, this is like inspired by Llama from Facebook. And I was like, no, it's not. We like came up with the name first. We renamed it to Llama Index, and so it kind of like started off as this like design project, and since then it's evolved into this overall toolkit of not just different types of indexes for storing data, but really kind of the entire package that you need to build like a full stack LLM application over your data. Right, and we've kind of like evolved as these use cases have evolved as well. And so, yeah, I mean, if you guys haven't tried it, like some of you guys might have tried it, I would definitely encourage you guys to do so. But one thing that we're basically trying to do is like figure out the right level of abstraction to help users. So I think like a lot of people go into Llama Index through like the quick start, and it's basically just like, oh, here's how you like index data and query it with like 3 to 4 lines of code, right? And to some extent, like that is pretty nice because you kind of just get this out of the box experience. But inevitably, as you like start building these applications, you want to customize stuff. You want to actually create your own prompts. You want to create things like link things together yourself. And so one thing we've really been trying to emphasize, and this is something that's a lot of engineering efforts into the toolkit, is trying to make it as composable and modular as possible. And I think we've made a lot of progress in the half year. And that's also why we had this like tutorial series go out, which is just like, oh, here's how you can build like RAG and agents and all those things from scratch, right? As opposed to trying to use the out of the box stuff. And that's something we'll probably continue to iterate on. Yeah.
What was it that gave you conviction to turn this project into a separate company, to leave your job and to go forward?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think on one hand, I've always wanted to start a company. I worked at a startup before this, kind of cognizant of the fact that I was interested in ML, I was interested in AI, and I knew I wanted to start a company someday. Was it going to be this company? Like, honestly, like, no. I think, I need a PR team. So basically, like, I had this other idea back in the day. I was like trying to validate it, but you know, okay. I was interested in ML. I was interested in tech, and I was interested in creating a company. It was clear kind of from the initial traction of this thing, because I started off as a design project, right? But I think like as it grew, it became clear that LLMs were going to be huge. Everyone's going to be using LLMs, and pretty much everyone we talked to was going to be using LLMs on top of their data. And so really we saw like a huge use case opportunity here, because even before you think about like monetization or something, clearly like people are going to need tools to figure out how do you actually properly, you know, fit all this context into an LLM to unlock all these different use cases. And so it was really like pain point driven, as opposed to we like did this like giant business plan beforehand. It was more by building in the open, like as an open source project, you kind of identify and stumbled upon certain things that people are going to be using it for. And from there, you can kind of capitalize on the growth of that, right? And really try to expand upon the use cases. I think that's probably the case for like, if you are building an open source project, I think the way we did it was really by trying to solve a pain point or use case, right? And we didn't really have like a business plan or something beforehand. And I think for what it's worth, I think a lot of successful open source projects, especially in like Gen AI, have kind of started off like that. And like once you see there's like a lot of interest, you just become very invested in the project, right? And you get really involved as part of like the kind of like the hype cycle, but also like kind of any latest updates and releases. And you, there's just this like huge, like rapid feedback from the community. And that's been like invaluable to help us grow.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about that rapid feedback. Mm-hmm. That sounds incredible, but also sheer chaos in this time. I really kind of see you and other folks like LangChain as being like in the eye of the storm. It's like exhausting for all of us to keep up with AI, but like that's a different level. So I just kind of want to check in, like, you know, I hope you're sleeping, but I'm also just curious, how do you do it? How do you lead your life and how do you lead your team in this insane period?
Yeah, that's a good question. I honestly don't have a great answer to this. There are a few factors though that like you kind of have to consider when you start like an open source project. I think it's generally nice for us to have the perception that like people think we ship very quickly, and also for LangChain too, for what it's worth. I've said this to a few people. When you're building a Python library, the requirements for shipping are a lot lower than trying to build like a full stack application. You should write unit tests. Sometimes you don't need to. You should add a linter, right? You should add types to stuff. But you don't need to like consult with a PM. You don't need to come up with like a design, right? You don't need to have three people in a room hashing out the front end, back end, the deployment and all that stuff, right? And of course, that's a totally valid way of building an app. So I think it was kind of nice to just have this freedom. Open source is like a playground for you to really validate ideas as basically Python modules for people to play around with. And so I think if you are building in open source, I would really lean hard into that like rapid feedback cycle, right? The second thing I'll say, it's definitely not for everybody. I mean, like, I don't think there's really any way around it. I think pretty much every founder I like talk to, and I don't think it's just me. I think they all like work their ass off. Like, I think it's just like, everybody kind of is a little bit of a workaholic and everybody basically works like 6-7 days a week, but you know, okay. Like toxic employer aside, like the like I do think the team is very passionate, right, about the project. And I like would never tell my team, hey, we need to get this done on the weekend, like, right, it's like Sunday night. But it is really kind of like due to the nature of the people that you like look for, that you want people to really believe in the project and that, you know, they're just like really interested in kind of like hacking on it for fun. I think that really helps because it kind of drives and inspires like a lot of activity around the open source and also like feedback from the community. But I think in the end, it is hard, right? I started this thing last November. The funny story is I think over winter break, first, my girlfriend got sick. So we like canceled our travel plans. So I was just working for like a week. And then the week after, it was like raining in SF. So I was indoors, right? So I was just coding on GPT Index. I think in the end, a lot of people in this space have pushed themselves very hard. And I will say it's probably not for everybody, right? But it is something that you kind of have to ask, like, you know, is this something I'm like very passionate about? Is this something I want to commit to?
LangChain has come up a few times. That's awesome that you are literally both from the same company, which is, by the way, like a small company, right? This is like a 30-person company or something like
that?
Yeah,
it's like a Series B company. Okay. Yeah.
Let's talk about the competitive landscape. Let's talk about LangChain, some other players like Unstructured.io. I'm curious your take on where these products overlap and where they differ with yours.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, obviously there's overlaps with like LangChain, right? I mean, I think the response I give for that is I think they have a lot of stuff and I think they have a great community. And I'm sure a lot of people using LlamaDocs also use LangChain. I think from the beginning, we've always just tried to create like pretty focused, like curated abstractions around stuff like data ingestion, retrieval, how do you properly like index your data? How do you really define like data relationships so that you can not only just do standard RAG type systems, but also define like advanced retrieval algorithms on top of that. And going back to our mission statement, I think the mission is to unlock capabilities of LLMs on top of your data, right? And so a lot of that is creating better abstractions for retrieval. We're pretty thoughtful about how we do that. But the other aspect is we're also very interested in stuff like fine tuning, where you can really figure out how to, like, you know, optimize your embedding model, optimize the LLM for better retrieval and synthesis. So I think for us, we just want to stay true to our mission statement, right? And kind of build stuff in that category. I'd say like we're just like very focused on that versus, for instance, broader framework like LangChain. Unstructured is interesting, actually, because unstructured is like they have a set of really, really good file parsers, basically. Like you can parse PDFs, HTML files, like a bunch of different APIs. We actually integrate with them because we haven't invested really any first-party effort in building these types of parsers. Their mission, for what it's worth, does seem kind of overlapping, I guess. It's like ETL for LLMs, which is very much on the data layer. But I just think very practically speaking, especially on the open source side, they're very complementary. Like we haven't really invested effort into the actual parsing, right, of the PDFs. And I'd say they're much better than we would be at this. But we invest a lot on the data orchestration and how do you tie this into like downstream retrieval.
Anyone else besides unstructured LangChain that comes to mind?
Okay. Another thing is that one thing you realize as a founder, and I'm sure many of you realize this, is that when you build in this space, you basically overlap with everybody and integrate with everybody and also end up like competing with everybody. So yeah, I could list off like 10 different companies that are like roughly similar to what we're doing, but we're not really competing right now because we're an open source ecosystem. Like for instance, on the ETL side, there's like Noom, there's Cid.ai, there's like Metal, all right? On like kind of like more end-to-end hosted services, there's stuff like Vectara. On like just like traditional data ETL and orchestration, right? There's like Fivetran, Airbyte, and DBT. And then on like just general orchestration, there's like Airflow, Dagster. So it's very interesting. I think everybody is kind of like eyeing the space. And then you have companies that you didn't really expect to kind of enter into this space, but they are. And now like some of their toolkits could be seen as like overlapping. Like Vercel has like an AI toolkit, right? Vercel is a great tool. Like we use them, but they also have like, you know, toolkits designed to help people like onboard onto LLMs. So I think in the end, it's just like, we try not to worry about it too much. We try to partner with everybody if that makes sense.
Got it. Yep. I'm curious, on the other end of things, there are some larger, more established players mm-hmm. that are potentially moving into some of Llama Index's swim lanes. So maybe OpenAI or Databricks, for instance, is increasingly doing a bit of everything, including some pre-training and vector search. Do you see any of those, Databricks and others, building out something like Llama Index or LangChain? And if so, how do you think about differentiation?
Yeah, I think every LLM provider is basically building some sort of out-of-the-box RAG. I think, like, I mean, I'm just being honest, right? That's basically what's happening. I think the value that a framework, that any framework provides, is the fact that it can kind of abstract away that layer, right? And so that you can basically, assuming there's a healthy competitive ecosystem of LLMs with different performance and cost trade-offs, then it allows you to optimize the best one for your use case. If OpenAI just creates the best models at the cheapest price and somehow they open source everything, right, then yeah, we'd be dead. I mean, there's no reason. Everybody would just use OpenAI and then they would literally just have a complete monopoly over the platform layer. But, you know, I think these days there is kind of a healthy ecosystem of, you know, third-party API LLM providers that have very good models like OpenAI, Anthropic, but there's also like a huge demand for open source and a lot of other models too. And so I think like LLMs are building that because it just makes sense. Their users who are using OpenAI are probably asking for that type of stuff. I do think as an orchestration layer, we can kind of abstract away that part and really focus on helping users solve their end use cases, allow them to plug their own vector databases, LLMs, re-rankers, anything else that they want, and really like focus on making that really good without actually also getting dragged into the problem of like trying to build the LLM itself. Especially as a startup, when you don't really have that many resources, right? Like we're still a very small company. I think that's like the best move to make because you do want to stay focused. You can't like do everything.
Yeah. How many people are you now?
We're like six.
Yeah. Six people. Nice. All right. I want to ask one more question about the product and then we'll talk about agents. I know Josh and I'm sure many others are excited about agents. You kind of alluded to this earlier a little bit, but it seems like Llama Index has kind of like two types of users. You have these folks in the open source developer community that are kind of the most passionate and outspoken about the project. But then you have enterprises and you're really working to help them build and deploy LLM applications to production. Different needs for both. Mm-hmm. How do you like prioritize your roadmap? How do you serve both and like where is the tension between the two?
Yeah, I think a lot of enterprises are building maybe like less agent like stuff and more kind of like RAG stuff. So stuff more around like search and retrieval as opposed to trying to like automate a bunch of workflows. That's something we just noticed for a lot of companies. For what it's worth, we've talked to a lot of companies from YC startups to bigger enterprises that are building chatbots. And because LlamaIndex kind of started off that way, like really for the first like 6 months, most of our abstractions were around like building chatbots. And so a lot of the use cases we've seen from early stage startups all the way to like Series B, Series C, like SpringWorks, like Clearbit, all the way to bigger companies like Uber, like they're basically all kind of building these like search retrieval. I think as we've started to come out with like more fancy RAG modules, we've started to see people adopt more and more of them. And so some of them are starting to use some of our agent abstractions for search retrieval purposes. Some are using some of our automated routing capabilities to basically kind of route between a bunch of like different types of data. Some of them are using kind of like our query decomposition capabilities to basically kind of like, you know, break down a question into a series of like sub questions, basically a train of thought. So I think for a lot of these companies, they are focused on that search retrieval use case. I think for a lot of like the average developer, I think generally speaking, LM developers are probably more experimental, like just people that are just playing around with different things, like hacking on stuff at hackathons. I think because our toolkit has actually been mostly focused on like RAG stuff, it's kind of stayed consistent between like developers and enterprise.
So you're not seeing different needs between the two?
I think we're starting to see agents a little bit more, but also we released agents like relatively later, right? Like we released it 2 to 3 months ago with kind of like an emphasis on data. And so that kind of reflects our focus too. There was like a lot of interest a few months ago in these kind of like agent simulations, I think, like the AI towns of the world or like generative agents. We wanted to be a little more focused. So when we thought about agents, we really thought about, okay, how can we make them good for actually like search and retrieval tasks? And so part of it does reflect like the focus that we have.
What do you think is going to be actually really useful for making useful agents for deploying those? Like what kinds of things are you building into LlamaIndex to support that?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you're probably more qualified to answer this question than I am.
I'm curious for your answer.
but I think there's a few things. I think adding too many tools to an agent generally doesn't work. If you add too many things, it starts getting really confused and then it starts like mixing up the types of tools that it's supposed to use. And I'm just talking about like agents, like, you know, you don't actually fine tune a model. You'd basically just use like OpenAI function calling or use like GPT-4 to kind of build your standard while loop or React loop or anything that you want. So I think careful specialization of agents we've seen have made them a lot more reliable. I think the other piece here is an interesting idea that we haven't really explored yet, but I think people are kind of thinking about is just like having a human in the loop. Like if you're able to have like a conversational agent that like does train of thought and then ends up like picking the wrong action, can you actually have a human say like, hey, you know, this actually is the wrong tool. Can you go back and like recorrect it? Mm-hmm. I think when we were building agents, we came up with like an entire list of like tips and tricks, some of which I'm like forgetting off the top of my head, for basically kind of making agents a bit more reliable. It turns out a lot of it is basically just prompt engineering. You can like just very sternly tell the agent like no and give it like bad examples of like bad behavior. And if you do it enough, they'll stop doing it, right? Okay, so by the way, like what is an agent, right? Like when I'm talking about agents in this context, an agent is basically like a reasoning loop combined with a set of tools. The way it interacts with a set of tools is either via a single parameter, like a query string, right? Like a natural language string, or it could be an entire structured definition. It could be like an entire JSON that you basically pass in. Stuff like this is made a lot easier with stuff like OpenAI function calling that can produce structured functions. So the more parameters you add to a function that you have an agent infer, the more liable it is to failure, because then the agent has to infer way more parameters for this thing to actually work well. So there are a few techniques, just very practical ones, that you can do to make sure the agents are more reliable. One is you can try to make all the parameters optional, right? So that if they're optional, the agent actually messes up on these parameters, that's fine. You basically give it some leeway in like failing to actually provide the right set of parameters, and then you can like have a fallback in the function itself. The other is having some sort of like error handling in the function so that if, you know, the execution of a function actually fails, it doesn't just raise an exception that crashes the program. It actually returns a string that you feed back into the chain of thought prompting of the agent itself, and then the agent can actually use that to actually try to infer the right query. These are kind of like two pretty concrete tips that we've found that do help to improve performance. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think if there's other stuff, but yeah, in the meantime.
That's pretty cool. You guys should put out like a blog post or whatever about...
Oh, I think we did it, but this is like 3 months ago. That's why it's like slipping some of them. Yeah. Oh, the other piece I was going to mention. So we actually just came up with this idea of like hierarchical agents is a lot more reliable than, for instance, just like a flat agent with access to like a bunch of different tools. So for instance, if you model agents like a tree where you have like a general orchestrator agent that passes on to some like, you know, agent maybe specialized at querying a SQL database, another agent specialized at querying a vector database, and some other stuff, each agent is going to be relatively good at its job. And the orchestrator agent just has the job of passing a query basically as a router to one of the underlying agents. If you just try to make one agent have access to like 10 to 20 different tools, it's just going to fail terribly, right? It's not going to know like the right API interfaces to query. So it's almost like kind of designing your agents as like these API interfaces, as like microservices. And we generally found that does work pretty well.
Nice. And whether it's agents or the more traditional RAG stuff, what are some applications that you are really excited about that you've seen either people building or that you want to see people building?
Yeah, I think there's like kind of the fancy applications, like the AutoGPTs, like agent simulations. That's kind of cool. I just haven't really thought like super deeply about those. I think for me, the stuff that would be really exciting that honestly sounds pretty boring is just like having a really good PDF parser and just being able to understand like 1,000 PDFs. I don't think anyone's really done that well. Actually, part of this isn't really, it might be, it could be like a thing you solve with LLMs, but there's just no good table extractor from a PDF. Like if you go to any research paper and you throw it into anyone's these like PDF parsers, it takes a lot of human effort to try to parse out all the tables and model it in like a right hierarchy. And then you have to figure out how to index like 100 to 1,000 different PDFs and make it good for search retrieval. So building the right index over that actually is something I'm very interested in, right? And it's boring, right? Because it's not like, you know, agent AGI, but it's useful. Yeah.
No, I think that's a great answer. And if anyone else is looking for a project or whatever, I think both of us would probably be really, really interested in talking to you and buying this. So...
I think, yeah, if you build this, you would make a lot of money. Like, yeah.
All right, last question. You're releasing very fast. You've put out a ton of stuff. What should we go and make sure that we see and pay attention to? And also, what's coming soon?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think we generally just release on our Twitter and also our LinkedIn. We have a Discord community, so there's like active discussion there. We try to post articles and releases and other stuff there. Those are probably the main avenues. I think I need to do a better job. Our documentation is typically a few days to like a week behind the actual updates. So I need to do a better job making sure it's in sync. So I think one thing that we're trying to do is really actively clean up the docs to make sure they reflect like the latest stuff that we have. We also have like a Medium blog. I think that's stuff for kind of just like longer posts. It's interesting. I think I've kind of just gotten in this habit of just putting releases on Twitter. And I think there's like pros and cons to that. And by the way, if you're doing this, the pro is it kind of conveys the perception that you're shipping very quickly. The con is that they basically expire after 24 hours. Like no one's going to be able to see them anymore, which means that like anyone who didn't read your tweet is going to miss out on the feature. So it's a very real problem, right? You want to make sure that there's a funnel that anyone who doesn't follow you can actually discover the feature easily on like tutorials, docs, especially if you're trying to build like an open source project. I think we realized this honestly a little bit like later on than we should have. Like there's a huge value in just education and just continued education, right? YouTube videos, working with others to help exemplify certain use cases. So we're trying to do that a little bit more.
Anything exciting coming out soon that we should keep an eye out for?
Yeah, I don't know how many details I can give publicly, but we do need to make money at some point. And so, yeah.
What a note to end on. Okay, yeah. A round of applause for Jerry. All right.